day that I turned down the deal with the prosecutors, I feel like I felt like I got so much back that day, so much of my integrity, so much of my power. I still, after the fact, was a convicted felon, 35 years old, millions of dollars in debt, somewhat of a social pariah. You know, my network was destroyed. And if ever there was a moment to crawl under the covers and say, I quit, it was this moment, because how do you come back from that? But, you know, just, I think you just have to, fight. You have to be a fighter. And I think that's something that we all have inside of us. We have a choice when we're faced with this adversity. We can either let it crush us, or we can just go right through it, you know, just right through it. And if you don't think there's a solution, you're wrong. And I think that I've always been an optimist, and I've always kind of believed in myself, even like at times where maybe I shouldn't have. But I just said, you know, there's a story here, and maybe the story is the way out. So I got a really small book deal because the publishers obviously wanted me to write this big celebrity takedown piece, and I wasn't going to do that. And so I got rejected time and time and time again. You know, finally I got a small book deal. I wrote that book, and I waited for my life to change. And I think like 10 people read it. Maybe you were one of them, but I think the other 9 were related to me. And, but I was, you know, I was not giving up. I was like, okay, I'm going to have to just get more strategic. Who can I collaborate with? How can I bring in the big guns to tell the story in a way that it'll scale and I will have opportunities again? And so I made this short list of filmmakers in Hollywood. And for me, at the top of that list was Aaron Sorkin. He is the highest paid screenwriter. And he was my favorite writer. So I just started trying to get a meeting, and most people laughed me out of their office. But you know, what I found is there is this moment after I failed spectacularly and somewhat in front of the world, tabloids were covering it. And I just had this moment of like, holy shit, I don't need to care anymore what anyone thinks. Like, I have lost everything. I have failed in front of the world, and now, and like, in a way, I'm liberated, you know? And so I didn't care what anyone said. I just kept going. I believed in it. I found that like inner belief. When I didn't have it, I talked back to that voice. I went to war with that voice in my head. Sometimes that's what you got to do. Sometimes it's about surrender and meditation, and sometimes it's about going to war with that voice in your head and re-narrating it. And I just was relentless with the mindset and with the taking the actions. And I got that meeting with Aaron Sorkin, and he decided to write the movie, and here we are.
Yeah, resilience, deep sense of resilience based on a sense of justice and just wanting to see your life and the world align with what you see as justice. And then not giving up.
For sure. For sure. And not allowing the world to convince me that I don't have impact over the outcome. You know, like, I really wanted and want a life on my terms. That doesn't mean I don't compromise. That doesn't mean that I don't.
Whoa. We got to watch out. Compromise is a dirty word. We don't like compromise. What do you mean by compromise?
That doesn't mean I don't practice tactical empathy. That's what I consider compromise.
Well, compromise sometimes is it being willing to see a better way.
Right. Or being willing to see both parties have a good outcome.
Collaborate.
Yeah.
All right. But don't never be so sure of what you want that you wouldn't take something better.
No way. You got to be very nimble. you can't get fixed to, you know, you can't get fixed or identified to a certain thought or paradigm, and because then you're just limited. You can't see outside of that.
Yeah. I mean, and again, everybody got to read the book, because there's so many moments and the different stages on a journey. I mean, we're barely hitting this. I mean, and early on when, you know, you had the opportunity of losing your job or have the poker game be taken away from you when you were in LA, and those are in a very early days before this has evolved in so many ways, but you were never really willing. I mean, you never give up. It's just, I'm telling you, you got to read the book. I mean, it's a phenomenal story. It's amazing. It's an amazing journey.
So we have a question. We're going to get to questions now. We've got a question that was submitted, and this is getting right to it. This is kind of getting right to it. So the game, the egos in the game, how did you negotiate, Molly, the rules, concessions, whatever else that benefited you and kept players coming back?
This is a great question, and definitely had a journey with this. I definitely at 24 years old was a people pleaser, and certainly was affected by how much social capital, how powerful the players were in the game. And so in the beginning, I was a bit of a pushover. And what that means when you're running a high stakes poker game is that it's going to cost you a lot of money. And after a couple big hits where I sort of let people out negotiate me, I realized that I had to stand firm and that I had to stop being a people pleaser and really not let people push me around. But I still had to maintain this positive effective presence, meaning people still needed to feel that I cared about them, that I cared about their outcome. And so a lot of times what would happen is when people lose money, it can manifest in some very unsavory behavior. And the easy thing to do is to just get pissed off about how this person is acting. The more complicated, more strategic, and better outcome is to try to understand what is beneath the bad behavior. What is that? And it's fear. When people lose money, they get into fear. It doesn't matter how rich they are. And so if you can identify that someone's in fear, then you can diffuse it. Then you can say, look, you had a bad night. You're an excellent poker player. You're going to come back. You're going to run all over the table. You're going to be fine. Go home, take as much time as you want. You know, then immediately the emotions come down, the fear starts to ease. Conversely, if you meet aggression with aggression, especially in my position, you're just not going to get paid. And you're not going to be this person that people feel, you know, they can trust or has their best interests in mind. So, you know, that was a really important lesson I learned with being in those rooms at a pretty young age.
You know, there's a really interesting element to that when you're talking about trust and whose best interests are in mind, because we end up talking about trust an awful lot and slicing and dicing. Mm-hmm. What is trust really? Most people that you interact with in business, they're happy to put your interests first as long as their interests are before that. And as soon as their interests are more important than yours, then you kind of go by the wayside. You get kicked to the curb. But there was a way that you took the pressure off these people. Yeah. So that recognizing their fear, there was less immediacy of fear of consequences, you know, really helping them take a step back, which then reestablished the trust as long as the pressure wasn't on them right away, you got back into, yeah, you were asserting your interest, but you weren't really trying to kick them to the curb at the same time. There's something really interesting in that, in the whole trust dynamic.
Yeah.